Hi, and welcome back to our continued discussion of Office 365 development. I'm Scott Hillier, and this is still Ted Pattison with me. And we're going to continue looking at our deep dive into the Office 365 app model. And this is Module 6, Deep Dive into Provider-Hosted Apps. Our agenda for this module is to do a little bit of an introduction about provider-hosted apps, then talk about programming them in C#, followed by how we can program them in JavaScript. We're going to look at some special elements here, in particular the Chrome control and something called remote event receivers. So we've got a pretty full agenda here. Let's go ahead and get rolling. All right. So first we'll start off with an introduction here and talk a little bit about the architecture for provider-hosted apps. Now, provider-hosted apps can be found in both a cloud version and an on-premises version. So when we're talking about deploying to our provider-hosted apps to the cloud, then we can think about deploying them to Azure websites. And of course, those Azure websites can take advantage of things that are in Azure, like SQL Azure or the Azure Data Market. And the host web and app web relationship that we saw in SharePoint hosted apps could still be there. So in particular, we still have a host web, which is the place where the app gets installed. That's where we are when the app is installed. We might have an app web as part of this if we chose, but it's not required. We may just have something that's installed in, say, Azure, which we refer to as the remote web. So host web is where you were when you installed the app. App web is that subsite underneath the host web, and remote web is your web application living in some other infrastructure like Azure. If our solution is going to be deployed on premises, then if we return to the slides, we can see an architecture there that shows us the same idea but substitutes in a few different things. So we still have our host web and potentially our app web. Instead of using Azure for the deployment, we might have our own internet information server that we deploy to. Of course, this could be really any infrastructure you want that supports web applications, but you know, focusing on the Microsoft stack could be internet information server. And then we could take advantage of SQL databases or other web services or what have you. So you can see that cloud versus on-premises is similar. It's just the technologies that are filling these different roles change somewhat. When we're talking about provider-hosted apps, just like we were talking about SharePoint-hosted apps, we always have this idea of app permissions. So that remote web we were talking about always has full rights to the app web. So if we have an app web, right, Ted, and we might not always have an app web, but if we did have an app web, there's nothing I really have to do to allow that infrastructure to talk to the app web. It has rights to do that, doesn't it?
That's right. You have permissions that are granted automatically.
So we're not necessarily in that world where we have to worry about the permissions the app has until we do something like want to talk to the host web. All right, so the app permissions, when you consider what that combination of person and app can do, are similar to what we had in a SharePoint hosted app, where you consider the rights of the person using the app and the rights of the app itself to determine ultimately what can happen. However, you know, Ted, provider-hosted apps are unique in that they can have this idea of an app-only permission, which sort of allows me to elevate privileges, right?
Well, if we have a SharePoint-hosted app, your app always has to call in, constrained by both the permissions of the app and the current user, and it's not either or, it's both of them need the permissions. So if you have an app that wants to do something and the current user doesn't have the permissions to do that, it can't do it. So with the remote web model, when you're calling across a network, you can basically make calls that drops the identity of the user to basically elevate above the permissions of the user. So if your app has permissions to create a list, but the user doesn't, you'll be able to succeed in what you want to do.
Great. So, and then if we take a look at the slide here, we can kind of see how that happens. Again, it considers only the app permissions and ignores the user permissions. And in order to make this happen, the mechanics of it are that we actually have to set the allow app only policy to true in the app manifest. Now, in the designer portion, it's just a little checkbox, but under the covers, it actually writes this XML you see here where it says, allow app only policy equals true. That sets you up, but that's not enough because when you call back in, you actually have to get yourself an app only token. So you need a token to call back into SharePoint that says, hey, this is the token that says only consider the rights of the app and not the user. Okay. When we think about creating provider-hosted apps, there's a couple of ways we can do it. We need to make a web project. Typically, that web project is going to be ASP.NET Web Forms or ASP.NET MVC5, but it really could be any legitimate technology that creates web-based solutions. So we're not limited to these Microsoft approaches, but these are the ones that we'll be taking a look at in our modules.
And that's the one that Microsoft gives you a lot more productivity tools,
sure,
and a lot more convenience. So if you're going to try to go it, you know, without ASP.NET, or with, you're going to be writing a lot of code and figuring out a lot of REST calls and security, where if you are just using the Microsoft stack and Visual Studio, you have a lot more conveniences built in, certainly.
Yeah, there's definitely less friction in using the Microsoft stack, but it's important to point out for folks that may have a need to use a different stack that it is possible. As long as you can create web applications, those things can be provider-hosted apps. As far as authorization is concerned, there's two types. If you're going to be in the cloud, then probably what you're going to be using is OAuth through Azure Access Control Services. And if you're on premises, then we're looking at what's called server-to-server high trust. Now, we're going to have much more of a discussion about the security end of all this in a later module. Right now, we're focusing primarily on the construction of it. So then we think more about the programmability. So if we look at the slide here, we can see our options for programmability. And we're concerned about something known as the SharePoint Context Provider class, which actually rolls up a lot of the tough coding we might have to do on the security side, making it a lot easier for us. We also have the option of programming in C#. We can use managed code, or we can use JavaScript. So the provider-hosted app really opens up a whole lot of possibilities to us in what kind of coding we can use. So CSOM or REST, C#, or JavaScript. If we're in the JavaScript world, we're using that cross-domain library we talked about previously. If we're in the C# world, we can take advantage of CSOM or REST. Okay, so let's take a look at the basics of creating a provider-hosted app. And we're just going to come in and fire up Visual Studio, and we'll say File, New, Project. And we need a place to put this, so I'm just going to browse in here to the module that we're working on, deep dive into provider hosted. We'll go into demos, select that folder, and let's just do a intro PHA for provider hosted apps. All right, good enough. We're going to pick app for SharePoint. Go ahead and click OK, which of course brings up our familiar wizard here. I need a place to put this. So this is Module 6, right? So let's go ahead and drop it in the Module 6 site. It's not going to be SharePoint hosted this time. Nope, we're going to do provider hosted. Click Next. And then it says, well, what do you want to create? So the thing here is, we've said a couple of times throughout the training that we've been doing, is that we can support web forms or MVC. I'm a pretty big fan of MVC. I think the controller model, the model view controller, is makes a lot more sense to me. And I'm going to go ahead and pick that one for this. So let's go ahead and do that. We'll click Next. And now it says, how do you want to authenticate? Well, I'm going to target the cloud here. So we're going to go ahead and use Windows Azure Access Control Services. Click Finish. And then I expect to get a login dialog here because we're using Office 365. So it's going to need to log in and get information in order to finish the setup of this project. That should do it. Let's sign in. And we give it a couple of seconds here to finish up, and here it is. Okay, so now what we've got in this project that we've created, if we come over here and look at the solution, is you'll see that we have two projects in here, right? So this is the intro PHA and the intro PHA web. Now, if I open this thing up, we'll see that the intro PHA web is my MVC5 application. So there's my controller folder here. I've got my home controller in play. And that's pretty easy to understand. This is the remote web. This is what we were talking about when we said the remote web. And above it then is the SharePoint project. And this is the project that is the app itself. And, you know, currently we've just got this app manifest in here, which we've seen several times and is responsible for allowing us to specify things like permissions we want our app to have. That's great. But there really isn't anything else in here. So unlike the SharePoint hosted apps that that had a lot of goodies in here, including the feature folder and other things. But you know, Ted, there's sometimes where I want one of these, right? Even with my provider hosted app. So I have my remote web, but maybe I want an app web as well.
And you're not going to find anything inside of visual, nothing obvious to put that inside there. But I guess the scenarios are, a little bit later, you're going to show the cross domain. You're going to need an app web for being able to route calls in. But then sometimes you just want a storage place within SharePoint, not necessarily within your backend database, to create a SharePoint list or sure. to create a document library.
Right, so if I wanted a document library, where's that going to go? I can't put that in Azure, right? So I can come up here and right-click this thing and say, let's add a new item. And then I could come in and say, oh, you know what? I want a list, and I'm just going to call this thing documents. I'll keep it easy. Click add. And then I'm going to say that I'd like to create that based on some existing template, and let's use a document library. Sounds like the right thing. Go ahead and click finish, and then watch this magic happen. Over here in that project that used to contain not much of anything, all of a sudden now it's blown out into have all these different elements that make it look a lot like a SharePoint hosted app. And what's going to happen now that I have something that needs a place in SharePoint to live, I'm going to get an app web. So the idea here is that you always have a host web, you always have a remote web, you optionally have an app web. Sometimes you want it for something like a document library that's critical to your application. Sometimes you may need it for communication, like when you're doing cross-domain calls. But in any case, it's optional, but folks shouldn't walk away with the idea that you have a SharePoint hosted app or a remote web. It's possible to have a project that has kind of both of them in the same place. Now, the other thing that we can look at here is just the code, right? So we're going to take a look at the coding in some more detail here, but here you just see the beginnings of our example, and this is some client-side object model code done in C# that is really doing nothing more than getting the title of the current user. So quick thing to point out here, again, we're going to look at it in some more detail, is just that we have the option to write client-side object model code in C#. And before we were doing it in JavaScript, and we're also going to be able to write it in REST as well. Again, we'll take a look at that as we go along.
Client-side code that runs on the server.
Yeah, imagine, right? So if you're somebody that says, hey, you know, Ted, I don't ever want to write a line of JavaScript code, this is your project right here, because you don't have to write a line of JavaScript code. Now, I could go ahead and just fire this thing up. And when I do, when I start this thing, we're going to get that great F5 experience, and it's going to deploy our app to SharePoint. So that thing that had the document library is going to get deployed. And then what's going to happen is my remote web is going to run here locally on my machine, and it's going to allow that debugging that's actually going to occur with part of it in Office 365 and part of it here locally. So that's pretty impressive that you get that just from pushing a button. Of course, I'm going to have to sign in, right? Because ultimately we're launching from this place. So we'll go ahead and do that. And, you know, what's interesting is here I am obviously in the cloud signing in. You can see now, look up here at the URL. You can see it's that msacademy.sharepoint.com. I hit the trust dialog and I say trust it. And then it's going to launch my application for me here, my provider hosted app. Give it a second to do that. It's working on it. Working on it. Coming. All right. And then here I am. So here I am being welcomed, right? But look up here at the URL. This thing is local on my machine. So I was launching from within Office 365, but running locally. So that is a great debugging experience. And of course, things like breakpoints, et cetera, work inside this environment as well.
And then just the local host code running right there in Visual Studio Debugger is making true live calls right into Office 365.
Yeah, it's actually pretty slick, right? That's that reduced friction that you get from working inside of Visual Studio.
Yeah. I guess the other point is when you had a SharePoint hosted app and you hit F5, Visual Studio installed the app. But now Visual Studio is doing one extra step, which is to create a temporary security app principle. And you could do it all manually, but it just does it behind the scenes because that's what's necessary to basically make those remote calls inside there.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So again, that reduced friction. And we're going to talk in some detail when we get into the security module about how all that's happening. But you're right. It's
at this point, we don't have to care because Visual Studio is doing it all behind the scenes.
Simple as pushing a button. All right. So let's go back to the slides now and talk about writing some code. So I took a look at some of the basic code there that got written for the client-side object model. But what are our options here for C#? Well, when we're writing in C#, we can write in the client-side object model or REST. But in either case, what we really care about here, the first element to study here is the SharePoint Context Provider class. Now, as we've talked about, there's a bunch of security plumbing that's underneath this that allows for the authentication of the application so it can call back into SharePoint and all that. And another big advantage of the Visual Studio tooling and the templates that we're using is that Microsoft has created this SharePoint Context Provider class for us that wraps up a lot of that functionality so that we don't have to get involved in the nastiness of it. So it's going to do things like check to make sure that our application was properly launched from SharePoint. Because if you have a remote web on some infrastructure somewhere, you're supposed to go into SharePoint, which of course would authenticate you, and then you're supposed to launch it from within SharePoint and get redirected. But what stops you from going to a browser and simply typing the URL of that remote web directly and trying to go there? Well, the SharePoint Context Provider class is going to check that when the application launches to make sure that it was properly launched. So it's going to check for that valid context. It's going to simplify the management of the context of the app itself. You know, we had said in our SharePoint hosted app discussion that when your app launches, SharePoint passes in a bunch of interesting information to you, such as the URL of the host web. If you have a multi-page application, you have to find a way to remember that information. And the SharePoint Context Provider class does that for you. And as I said already, it simplifies the management of tokens. So if we return to the slides here now, you can just see some of the boilerplate code that comes out of the projects. And what's happening here is this is the code for validating the context token. So making sure that someone hit this site after logging into SharePoint. You'll find that code if you make a web forms project in the pre-init method. And you can just sort of see the switch case there, which is checking to see whether or not a redirection is required and someone has hit this application properly. In MVC5, it's created as a filter. So you will see it as a decoration on your controller methods called the SharePoint context filter. But in either case, it's validating that context to make sure that you were properly launched. I said again that, you know, when our app is launched, we get a bunch of interesting things that are passed in, and those interesting values become properties of that SharePoint context. And you can see them listed down there, the app web URL, the host URL, the language, and the product number. And that allows us to maintain that information without having to worry about remembering it in some way ourselves. It's taken care of for us. The other thing that's important about the SharePoint context that's given to you in these boilerplate projects is that they work both on premises and in the cloud. So what happens is the way the code is written is you're basically going to get the appropriate object for whether you happen to be running on premises or in the cloud. So we're going to use the same exact context whether we're running in one place or the other. Again, the whole idea here is to simplify the underlying security plumbing, making it easier for us. Here are some of the methods that are on that context for managing security tokens. And all I'll say here is that this is really just simplifying the management of these security tokens. And you can see, Ted, there's a tremendous value here in these. You know, we've got 8 methods that allow us to get any kind of token that we need to call back. So it really simplifies it. I don't really have to know that much about what's going on under the covers to successfully get a token.
And if you remember back to before they had this convenience class, you had to write the code that was then either hard-coded to your Office 365 OAuth or to your on-premises S2S connection, and then you couldn't have an app that did both unless you added a lot more code.
Exactly.
Now they just kind of buried it in the class, just makes it much more transparent.
Again, it's that low friction. It really does make it a lot easier. And here's just an example of it in managed CSOM. So note that if you look at that first line of code, we have the SharePoint context provider, .current.getSharePointContext. So that returns to me a SharePoint context, that variable called SP context. And then you can see I'm using one of those methods, create user client context for SP host. So what we're doing is we're creating a context that is allowing the current user to call into the SharePoint host. It's one of several of those methods that we looked at. And the rest of the code is really just straight up read. So you can see me walking through getting a contacts list that happens to be in the host web, reading the items out of it, and then displaying that information. Well, just like JavaScript, we can have CSOM or REST, but again, we're doing it all in C#. So here's an example of managed REST where I'm using that same context provider, but this time a different method, user access token for SP host. So this is getting me an access token instead of a context, but again, asking to read in to the host web. And then what I'm doing is I'm using the HTTP client to issue a REST call. And that is the same thing that we were doing with JavaScript, issuing a REST call in. But I want you to note the line of code here where we have the authorization header set, and that is a bearer token. And then we simply use the access token that was returned to us by the context and supply that as a bearer token, and we're going to get authenticated and be able to read. So again, the takeaway here is that both CSOM and REST are valid approaches, and this time we're doing it with C# instead of JavaScript. Okay, well, let's take a look at an example of how this might happen. So we'll bounce out of this, and let's just go into a project that we already have going. And this one we want is C# and a provider-hosted app. So I've got a couple of provider-hosted apps here to look at, Ted. So I actually have a solution with four projects in it. So I've got two provider-hosted apps. If we come up here and just look at the goodies that are in the solution. Sorry about that. Let's go back here and try that again. All right, there we go. If we just go look at the goodies that are in the solution, you'll see that I have one called CSOM Web Forms and one called REST MVC. So the idea is to show all the different things that we can do. So I can have an MVC project, I can have a Web Forms project, I could write in CSOM, I could write in REST, right? So there's really a lot of different combinations here, and this is really two provider-hosted apps in the same solution. Well, let's take a look at the web form ones for starters. So if I pop this open, you'll notice that I've got a contacts list here. So we already talked about that, right? I've added a list to this app, and that's going to give me an app web. And then my idea is to call back to it. Well, if I use C#, I'm not limited by the same domain policy, right? Because I'm making
you're on the server. You're not
making these calls from the server, right?
Exactly,
so it simplifies what we're doing. And if I pop open the web form version, you know, if you're an ASP.NET programmer, you've got the familiar pages section. There's good old default.aspx. And you're going to love this. We actually have a default.aspx.cs.
Finally, I'm comfortable.
Finally. So after looking at SharePoint hosted apps that didn't have code behind, we finally have code behind. I can go ahead and open this up and we can see what's going on. You'll notice in the first part here is the pre-init. We already talked about this. This pre-init is using the SharePoint context provider to do that context check and make sure that we were launched from within SharePoint and somebody didn't do something like try to directly access this using a URL. Then we come down into page load, and I can get my context here by calling SharePoint context provider current get SharePoint context. And then if I'd like to talk to the host web, then I can say context create user client context for SP host. If I want to talk to the app web, I can say create user client context for SP app web. But really, once I have that context, now I'm free to write the client-side object model code as I see fit. So what I'm doing now is doing a load on the web. I'm only asking for the title of that web. I do an execute query, and then I can read the title of the web. Down here, I'm doing a load on the web. I'm asking for the title of the web, execute query, and I can read it. So I have basically the same code being run, but because the context was for the host or the context was for the app web, it changes what I'm talking to. And that's a real great example of how simple this can be. Other cool thing I like here, Ted, is, you know, the execute query here is not asynchronous. So that makes my life easier, right? Because I don't have to do those callback functions. I can just pretty much write my code in line using this.
In general, you want your server-side code to make a round trip to SharePoint, get the data back, so then you could take the data and use it to parse into your page and use it to, you know, create the user interface you're going to send back.
Exactly. You can just keep going, right? Okay. So that's a look at CSOM in web forms. Now, what about REST? I can do that. So here's my REST project called REST MVC. I open this up, and we have the same contacts list in here, right? So we've got something that gives us an app web as well if we wanted one. And then if I come into my MVC project, this doesn't have pages, of course. It's got controllers and views. So there's my controller, and then have my views down here. There's my home view. All right, and if we start by looking inside the controller, we can open this thing up, and the first thing we'll see is the SharePoint context filter. Now, it's in MVC land, that filter is what's doing that context checking for us. And in fact, if we come over here and open up the filters folder, you can see the SharePoint context filter right there, and that is the code that's being invoked by that attribute that we saw. If I double click on this, it'll look pretty familiar to you though, because if I take a look in here, you're gonna see the same code that we saw in the init, right? This is basically the same idea. It's just checking to make sure that we were properly launched. So that's the first thing that happens, but then within the controller itself, here we have the index controller, which happens to be the default for this. So this is the code that's gonna run when the thing is first started up. You're gonna go ahead and get a context just like we did before. We get the current context, but now if I wanna talk to the host web, I'm gonna call user access token for SP host. So it is yet a different method that's specifically there to allow me to make REST calls and REST calls into the host. And I have another specific one that lets me make REST calls into the app web. So again, that low friction, it makes it super easy for me to get that. And then what I can do is build up a URI that I want to talk to, in this case, a RESTful URI asking for the title of the web. There's the same one asking for the title of the web, right? So we basically have the same code here. This is the point that I'm trying to make. It's the same code, but talking to a different thing. And then down here, we have the method that gets called to retrieve the title, which takes that request URI and whichever access token you are passing, uses the HTTP client to then execute that URI, being sure to pass in the appropriate access token. I'm asking for an XML document back, which I then just simply parse, and I can pull out from that parsed XML the value that I'm looking for and display it. So the key takeaway from this is that, you know, you really have a lot of options here in how you put together your code. You can do it with CSOM, you can do it with REST, you can do it in web forms, you can do it in MVC. But in any case, you're following these very simple and familiar patterns that really reduce that friction and just give you the key thing that's different, the context that's different, the token that's different, and then you kind of keep going from there. And really, just those patterns that we showed you right there could be used over and over again to do whatever it is that you need to do. All right, so let's jump back then into the slides and talk a little bit about JavaScript. So C# is great inside of these provider-hosted apps, very powerful, gets me out of doing anything with that has restrictions based on same domain policy. But there are times when I want to use JavaScript. So maybe I'm in a position where my provider-hosted app doesn't have access to OAuth authentication. So I'm not able to play in that realm. And so I might be in a world where I want to use JavaScript. So instead of using C# on the server side, I'm going to use some JavaScript. Well, we have a SharePoint context on the JavaScript side as well. So there's a library included in the MVC project template called spcontext.js, which is a little JavaScript library that appends the SP host URL as a query string to all the links in the current domain. So what it's basically doing is saving you from the trouble of having to take all that wonderful goodness that SharePoint passes into you and then bolt it onto the end of every URL to pass it on to the next page. So a little bit of help there. Not as helpful as the server-side one, but it is there.
I guess the point is that SharePoint will pass the URL back to the host web to the start page, but when your app goes, you know, has navigation to go to page two, page three, it doesn't automatically propagate. Either you add the code or use this helper class that's basically going to do that for you and just make it so you don't have to write the code.
Exactly right. That's exactly what it's there for, to just help you, you know, pass those values along. Okay, so if you're writing JavaScript, though, and you're not taking advantage of the OAuth infrastructure, then you're going to be needing the cross-domain library. Now, we talked a little bit about the cross-domain library. We saw that in action when we were doing SharePoint-hosted apps. There's a little bit more to it when you're doing a provider-hosted app. It's the same library. It's going to allow me to make a call from my remote web. Now, what's interesting about this, right, is that I have this remote web. And my remote web, you know, it lives in Azure or some other infrastructure, and it has its own domain. So, you know, maybe it's tedp.azurewebsites.net, right? Which is different than the domain that my app web has, which is different than the domain that my host web has. So that means that if I'm using JavaScript, from my remote web, I'm making a cross-domain call, whether that call is coming from the remote web to the app web or from the remote web to the host web. So you've sort of compounded the problem of calling across domains. But the cross-domain library can help you do it. So if we take a look at how we load the cross-domain library, we have a couple of different options. Now, when we were talking about this before in SharePoint-hosted apps, we were talking about referencing the layouts directory, which was possible because we were a SharePoint site. Here, what you have is you could simply take the library and put it in your project. So one way to get the library is just simply copy it out of the layouts directory and copy it into your remote web and use it that way. But the better way, the preferred way, is to do that loading of the JavaScript files using the jQuery get script, which is going to point back to the sp.requestexecutor.js library, same library we were using in our discussion in SharePoint hosted apps, and load that up and operate on it using that.
The one thing about it, if you do just take the file, put it in your project, it's a lot easier to get IntelliSense on the things that are inside there. So right. I'd prefer to do that.
Yeah, the only negative in it is you could make the argument about whether or not you have the latest and greatest one, right? And that's really, I think, that's the two things you're trying to balance. Am I worried that I have the latest and greatest one versus the value of having IntelliSense and other things like that? Yep, that's great. All right, so this is the cross-domain library architecture. It's not any different than the architecture that we presented when we were discussing the same thing for SharePoint-hosted apps, but now we have a remote web. So in this case, the iframe is appearing in the remote web. It still utilizes the app web to load the app web proxy for us. And I think this is an important idea here, is that you need an app web to make this work. So it's the app web that helps load that. And then that iframe is going to talk across to the app web proxy as it did before and do that communication across domain for us. So it's still the same basic infrastructure that we saw in SharePoint hosted apps. Works pretty much the same way.
Well, what about the motivations? You know, when would you use this? You know, one is you want to have client-side code calling right into SharePoint because you feel it makes your app more responsive. You know, but another case is when there's some type of a firewall in between the remote web and the SharePoint host that disallows the remote web, your server-side code, from directly calling in. And the idea is that the client's browser is on the host, on the client machine, that can get there. So sometimes you need to use this just because client-side calls from the browser in are allowed, but server-side calls aren't.
Or another situation might be where you're just not going to play OAuth, right? So you don't have access to the OAuth infrastructure to get
exactly
your...
Right, so.
Yep, to get it, you can just call in. Yep, so maybe it's different technology or what the case.
Exactly right.
Yep. Good. All right, so here is some of the code that makes this work. Again, this is very similar to what we were looking at before in the SharePoint hosted. So we can do it with REST or CSOM from JavaScript. Again, we're going to use that SP request executor, and we can either target the app web or the host web. So that's really what's different here, is targeting the app web or the host web. If we want to target the host web, we're still going to do that context switching that we needed to do from app web to host web to make it work.
And the other point would be anything you want to do to the app web, you automatically have permissions for it. Anything you want to do to the host web, you have to request and be granted permissions.
Yeah, that's a good thing to point out, right, is that we want to make clear that everybody understands that a remote web has full control over the app web, but when it calls into that host web, it's going to have restrictions based on whatever permissions it was requested and granted. Right. Again, we can do it with REST or we can do it with CSOM. So here is some example code for CSOM. And again, you can see the context switching that happens when you when you're targeting the host web. All right, so let's take a look at an example of this. I'm going to go ahead and open up a pre-baked project for us here. And this is our cross-domain provider-hosted app. All right, so what I'm going to do is just go ahead and fire this thing up. Let's just let it run, and then we'll take a little look at the code. All right, so remember, this is going to run locally on my machine while it deploys something. So we'll go ahead and log in. And password. Good. And we'll let it launch. And this isn't going to be too awful exciting, but you can see what we're doing is reading the host web and the app web site titles. So if you were paying close attention there, you saw it took a second, and then boop, it filled in the information for us. So that's when that asynchronous call came back. But you can see that clearly I was able to talk to the host web, clearly I was able to talk to the app web. All right, let's look at how it was done. So the way that we made this thing work, this happens to be using a web forms project. But we're interested in the scripts here, so we're going to come into this app.js where all the interesting stuff is and take a look at the code. Now, the first thing that we do in this code is we retrieve the host URL and the app web URL from those standard tokens that are passed into us. The next thing that we're going to do is load up the required libraries. Now, what we're doing here is we're using the jQuery get script to load these up. And the jQuery get script is this asynchronous call that's going to fire a function when we're successful. So what this code does that you see right here is it lines up in sequence the loading of sp.runtime.js, sp.js, and sp.requestexecutor.js. Another thing that's interesting about the remote web invocation of this cross-domain library is you got to load more things over here because I'm not actually a site inside of SharePoint. I don't have access to the same things that I might have if I was a SharePoint hosted app. But this code right here, I mean, you can lift this code right out of this presentation and just use it as is. It's the same code you're going to need every single time you want to invoke the cross-domain library from a remote web.
I guess one thing I'd point out is the sp.js that you're preloading is essential because CSOM's not going to work without it, but if you were doing REST calls, you know, you would really just need the SP requester executor.
Yep, that's right. So it is important what you're doing. I've got this stuff baked into all the demos, so I just basically lift this thing, but it's an important consideration for the, you know, how heavy is it, what am I pulling down, all that kind of stuff. So good thing to point out. And then here you can see that I am in fact just leveraging REST with this first call. And what I'm doing here is the standard code that we've seen before, swapping out the app context to get to the host web and then reading out the title. And if I scroll down, there's your CSOM call. And the CSOM call is going after the app web. And you can see in my success and failure functions here, I'm just getting the title. Okay. So this is showing you loading up the necessary libraries. Then you can make the call either with REST or with CSOM. All right, great. More goodies. Next on our hit parade is the Chrome control. So what happens when you make these provider-hosted apps and they live in a remote web is you are 100% responsible for the user interface that gets created there. You know, it's kind of interesting when I show people provider-hosted apps for the first time and I'm doing a demonstration, we probably have just finished doing SharePoint-hosted apps, and there's a lot of nice UI elements on the SharePoint-hosted app when you first launch it. But when you first launch a remote web as a provider-hosted app, there's nothing there. There's usually just some text for the demo or what have you. And people can kind of be thrown by that. They're like, why doesn't it look like, you know, something out of SharePoint? And the answer is simple when you think about it. It's living on some other infrastructure somewhere, so it can't possibly look like SharePoint. It doesn't know anything about SharePoint. What you might want to do is add some elements into your provider-hosted app that help it look a little bit like the SharePoint farm that it came from. And that's what the Chrome control does. So if we go back to the slide, you can see a little example here of the Chrome control. It gives you this nice little navigation across the top. You know, Ted, one thing I don't think we mentioned is really a requirement for these apps is that they should have a link that takes you back to SharePoint. So the Chrome control gives us that. You can see where it says back to site up there. And also, you know, we get a little bit of a blue here, which is the coloring that came from the farm where we were launched. You can see the icon. It's not the very exciting icon. It's the default icon. But nonetheless, we have an icon, the name of our app. And then also we get this little menu over here where we have account settings and contact us. So we have this gear icon that we can use to generate these menu items. We also get a little help icon. It's interesting here on this slide, the help icon is kind of missing here, but that's because I think you know, right, Ted, why we were missing the little help icon there. We have there was sort of a problem with the release candidate, with the final release of the Chrome control that didn't show it.
That's right, so the Chrome control worked fine in beta, but they changed the stock CSS just at RTM time and introduced a bug into the Chrome control. But it's just, it's a small little CSS thing that you can do with jQuery or whatever just to override that and get that
back. Just to put it back, and you can see this screenshot for this slide was obviously taken without fixing the little bug, so the question mark that should be over here on the right is kind of missing. Okay. How do we load the Chrome control? There's two ways to get this thing going. First of all, it's found in the sp.ui.controls.js library located in the layouts directory. So it's similar to all the other JavaScript libraries that we've been talking about using from the layouts directory. And so we can do the same kind of thing. We can simply take that library, copy it into our remote web and utilize it, or we can load it dynamically using jQuery. So you basically have the same options for using this as you did with the cross-domain library. If you're thinking about using it declaratively, here's a snippet that shows you how to use it declaratively. Basically, what you have is a big options object that you can put together that has key value pairs. And you can see, for example, that you can specify the help page URL, the icon that you want to use, the title of the app. And then this setting links section is used to define that menu that drops down out of the gear. And this is all drawn into a div which functions as a container. So if you put in this type of declaration in your page, then it's going to draw up the Chrome control for you declaratively. But we can also do it programmatically. So here's an example of doing it programmatically where we're going to create a new sp.ui.controls.navigation object, and we're going to pass in the identifier of the div where we want this thing to be displayed. In this case, that's Chrome underscore CTRL underscore placeholder, and pass in the options. And the option objects here are just what they were in the declarative portion. This is how you define the help page, the navigation, the icons, that type of thing. So you can do it either programmatically or declaratively. I think I find, Ted, generally the programmatic approach is a little more flexible. I can use context management type objects to make sure that that Chrome control appears appropriately as we go from page to page to page. The declarative one's probably okay for maybe even a simple one-pager type application, but usually programmatic. Is that how you do it?
I always do it programmatically. Kind of conditional code that says, what are your menu options today or where's the host web today? You're able to just take that and I think you have a lot more control if you do it with JavaScript.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's nice to know you can do it both ways, but certainly more control. Okay, so let's take a look at an example of this in action. Do the Chrome control. We're going to go ahead and open up pre-baked project that has this already in play. So this is our Chrome control provider-hosted app. Great. Open up that guy. And I'm just going to go ahead and run it. Let's see what it does first, and then we'll look at the code. So this will be a little anticlimactic, right, because we've already seen a screenshot of it, so I kind of know what to expect. But we're going to have to log in, right, because we're doing it from our Office 365 environment, just like everything else. And we'll hit sign in, launch our app for us. And boom, there it is. Okay, great. So you can see the elements that we were talking about, the navigation back, right? The icon, the title over here. Ah, look there. There's our little help icon. So we've got the question mark over here fixed. And then if I drop it down, you can see the navigation to page one or page two. Okay, so this is basically what you get when you implement the Chrome control. Just a little bit of home to make you feel, you know, warm and safe. All right, so how do we do it? Well, over here in the project, we of course have two projects in here because this is a provider-hosted app, and the action is all in here in the remote web. And inside the remote web, we're just going to pop open this app.js and make that bigger. And then you can see what we've got here now is an init function that's doing our get script. So we're going to reach over to the layouts and we're going to pull in spuicontrols.js. And when this is successful, we're going to call the render function. Well, here's the render function right here. The render function builds up that object, that options object that we're going to need to supply to the Chrome control. And so you can see things like the app title. There's the navigation elements that I just showed you in the demonstration. And then we do a new spuicontrols.navigation, looking for Chrome underscore CTRL underscore placeholder. If we go back to default.aspx, then there's the div that's being targeted. So pretty straightforward, pretty easy to use. You know, just load up that library, specify your options, and throw it in a div at the top of your page. And you've got a little something that makes it look like your app is more associated with your SharePoint farm.
Okay. And you know, one of the things about the Chrome control is that if someone has used a specific theme in the host web and you redirect, the Chrome control picks up the changes in the visual UI inside there, which is going to, not only does it look like a SharePoint site, but it looks like your SharePoint site.
Yep.
And so I think people are a little bit split. Some people really like the fact that it looks like a site. You know, the joke is that for the last decade, the number one project has been make my SharePoint site look like it's not a SharePoint site.
Right.
Now you're trying to make something that's not a SharePoint site look like a SharePoint site. And if you use it, you do have to kind of worry about strange themes and do a little bit more testing.
Sure. Yep.
Unless you're going to assume that your user is doing...
Especially if it's a commercial app.
If
right?
It's a commercial
you don't
app.
Know what you're going to get. Right.
Yeah, so there's the philosophy that I'd rather have total control of what my UI looks like and not have it change on anything what the user has done. You know, which would, you know, then maybe lead you down the road to not using the Chrome control.
And you could certainly do it that way. If you wanted total control, you could take it. Okay, last thing we're going to talk about in this module is remote event receivers. So remote event receivers allow you to create event handlers in your app. And these event handlers can be tied to a lot of things. But basically what you need to understand is that you're going to tie them to some kind of event. And then the code is going to be executed in the remote web. So you're going to be creating a service that's going to receive these events and then run that code in the remote web. We have two kinds of events. We have two-way events and one-way events. These map, if you're an old school SharePoint developer, these map to what we used to call ED and ING events, or before and after events, but they're basically the same types of events that we used to code when we were doing this on the server side, but now we're doing it on the remote web. And if you look at the slide here, you can see a little bit more about the two-way events, before events, also called ING events. These are a synchronous call that support a return value to you. And then one-way events are sometimes called after or ED events that are asynchronous calls and don't support a return value. Here's just a quick shot of the different events that are supported. Probably the most important thing to take away from this is that you've got a host of, you know, sort of expected events that you can attach to sites or lists and that type of thing, but also three key events that you can attach to the app itself that allow you to know when the app is installed, uninstalling, or updated, and then take some appropriate action based on that. If you want to add a remote event receiver, then you can simply use the add new dialog as you would for anything else and add a remote event receiver. And then what Visual Studio will do is build out a remote web for you for that event receiver. And that's true for all the things except the app events. If you're doing the app events, if you're interested in knowing the installed, uninstalled for the app events, then the way that you do that is by flipping a property inside your project. And so if we see the slide here again, you can see that there's a little screenshot here of the handle app installed, handle app uninstalling. These are where you flip from false to true, and then you're going to handle that event. When you get your remote web, it implements this interface called iRemote Event Service that's going to handle those one-way and two-way events. So your job is simply to build out the code in the process event or the process one-way event to handle the various events that might occur. When information is passed into you, when the event fires and information is passed in, you receive this SP Remote Event Properties object that tells you things about what event fired and perhaps provides additional information to you about the data that comes in as the event was acted upon. So this is sort of the input to the process. And then you might have a return value called SP Remote Event Result, in which you can do things like cancel the event or return a status. The way that you register event receivers for lists and items and sites and schema is to use CAML. So you're going to add a CAML element to your project that says how it should be bound. And the way that you do it for the app itself is inside the app manifest. So you can see examples of both of those things on this slide. One thing to be concerned about is debugging. If everything is local, if you had a local instance of SharePoint, say on a VM, then debugging is pretty much flawless. It just works. But if you're doing remote debugging, so you've got this remote event receiver, perhaps, that's working inside of Office 365, then you may have to implement the Azure Service Bus to support debugging. And the reason for that is that Office 365 can't find your locally running event handler. There's no way to do that. So the service bus acts as the proxy that receives the message from Office 365 and then forwards it off to your running local instance of the web service. And really, they've made this, for the most part, pretty doggone easy. What you'll do is create a service bus in Azure, and then you put the connection string for that service bus in your Visual Studio project, and everything just happens. Now, One gotcha in all of this that's pretty recent as of this recording is that Service Bus supports two kinds of connection strings. One is called an SAS connection string. The other is called an ACS connection string. The one that you want for remote debugging is the ACS connection string. The gotcha here is that recently Azure did away with the ability to create the ACS type of Service Bus directly in the UI. And so as a result, you have to use PowerShell to create it. And when you do that, you can create this special ACS version of the service bus and then take the connection string from that service bus, put it in Visual Studio.
One point is that, you know, this would be if you're up in Office 365. The problem is that Office 365 and SharePoint Online doesn't know localhost means your machine. However, if you had a local SharePoint farm, when you're in Visual Studio and your remote web cranks up as localhost, you don't have to do any of this. Debugging just works because SharePoint's running locally and localhost means localhost when you're contained to a single machine.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Okay, so for the last thing we're going to do is just run this demo of one of these in action. And a couple of things here. Well, let's just go ahead and run it and see it in action first, and then we can talk about it. I've got some breakpoints in here so we can see it. This is going to be a simple event receiver on an announcements list. So we're going to come in here and log in. And take a look at an app that has an announcements list in it. So here's our announcements list. And then what we're going to do is make a new announcement. Now, in my little scenario here, what we're going to pretend is that this announcements list is only for our team. So we'll pretend we're a team of super secret folks creating software no one's supposed to know about. And then we'll just come in here and say, you know, our new product is ready to ship. All right, so the idea here though is that, you know, this is a super secret announcements list. Not everybody's supposed to see it. So when I click save, we're gonna trap the fact that this happened and jump into our event handler. Now you'll see that I fired the process event, and the event type is item adding. So I'm receiving this event before the item actually ends up on the list. And what the code does here is it appends a little disclaimer that says for internal use only. So this is, you know, a super secret list. So we're going to say don't show anybody, it's for internal use only. And then what happens is we fire the process one-way event because I'm also trapping the item added just to show a before and after. And then what we're going to do is append a little tracking number to this. So important is it to keep this information secret that we're also going to track it so we know when it was done. We just keep going through this. Here's our new announcement, new product ready to ship. I'm going to come in here and just say view the item. And when I do say view the item, you can see there's our for internal use only and our official tracking ID that we've put on the end of this so we can make sure this information doesn't get compromised. Well, then I look at this and go, hey, wait a second, that's not what I wanted. I'm going to go ahead and delete this. I don't want people, you know, giving me the big brother treatment. So we'll come up here to delete it. And it says, are you sure you want to delete it? We click yes. And then we fire the item deleting event, where I come in here and throw the message saying items cannot be deleted from the list, and then return the status value cancel with error. And the result of that is that it says, sorry, there was a problem. Well, this is exactly what we expect because it says items cannot be deleted from this list. So what we've done then is trapped a few of those key events off of that announcements list and used it to implement our super secret announcements list. But you can see that basically what we've got here is just code inside the process event and code inside the process one-way event. And that's really our job, is to lay that out. Now, this was all done as remote debugging. I had it up in Office 365. So I'm just gonna come into the properties for my SharePoint project and just point out to you that I have enabled debugging via Service Bus. And here is that service bus connection string endpoint in my little test environment that I was using. And that's why I was able to set debug points and have them get hit here, because service bus was helping to make that happen. Okay, so we've seen an awful lot. Let's go back here and wrap up a little bit. So we've seen an awful lot with provider-hosted apps. We've taken a look at creating provider-hosted apps, how to program them in C#. We've looked at both REST and CSOM. We talked about programming in JavaScript, in particular, the cross-domain library. We showed you the Chrome controls so that you can get a little bit of your SharePoint farm into your app. And the last thing we looked at was remote event receivers. So we covered an awful lot of material there. There's certainly a lot of places for the folks watching this to go off and do a little bit more study. And so now I think what we'd do is let's go ahead and take a 10-minute break, and then we'll come back and we'll continue on.